Well, as we've been talking about all 7 o'clock hour, we haven't had a good chance to talk about. I mean, we back in, I would say this was probably in March or so, we talked about the seven deadly sins. This was a great show we did with our resident philosopher, Al Genie, where we really broke down the seven deadly sins, where it comes from, what they are, what they mean, and what we can do to avoid them, if possible. But there's another side to the equation. It's the seven heavenly virtues, and we didn't get a chance to talk about the positive. We're always focusing on a negative, Al. That just seems to be the deal. Al Genie's in studio. He's a resident philosopher. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago and a regular here on the show. Professor, good to see you.
Good to be here. Always good to be here. And you know what? Looking at the negative is a good way to begin because, as St. Thomas said, we really learn from the negative act of separation, that we sometimes learn from what's being done the wrong way in order to do it the right way. But I want to come back to the seven deadly sins. Oh, yes, they are the all-too-delicious, all-too-human sins. They're not the worst of the worst. They're not talking about genocide and rape and murder, but they're seven basic sins of the human experience. By the way, Gregory the First wrote them actually for the monastery to remind the monks of what appropriate, what would be appropriate conduct or not. And he talked about pride and envy and anger and sloth. He got tired then and he just stopped. No, I'm sorry. and then greed and then gluttony and lust. And everyone says, but what's so terrible about these? Everyone needs to finish that pizza or feels feels an impure thought to run in regard to one's neighbor's partner, et cetera, et cetera. But what Gregory was talking about, these are the basic sins, and these are the ones that are so common in human life and that challenge us. And if we cannot control these, then we erode our critical skills in regard to larger sins. And it's easier and easier. In other words, in some
gateway
real
sins.
Sense, they're gateway sins.
Right.
They really are gateway sins. You know, you never thought of it that way.
Right.
Recently, a friend asked me that. He says, do you think marijuana is a gateway drug? I says, only if you really enjoy it, but it's not good enough after a while. And then it's the next, and then the next, and the next, and the next. I remember somewhere in the 70s, under the rubric of experimentation only, trying a certain kind of stronger hallucinant than that, and saying, "Oh no, this is the end of control. This is not."
You went to the outer edges of control.
You're not on control. You're no longer who you are. You just need that. And really, addiction, when we really talk about it, is we become addicted to ways of life. And so, Gregory was talking about we become addicted to pride when we're only concerned about vanity and our own arrogance, and we want to be superb in regard to others. We become addicted to envy, that is, we're always jealous and covetous. You have that more, and envy's the worst one because envy just doesn't say, "I want what you have." It really says, you have something I want and you don't deserve it and I'm going to take it from you so you suffer in not having it. There's something more to envy. Envy is just, oh, that's a lovely suit. I wish I could have it.
<You're right. laughs>
Or I wish I lived in that house. Or look at that car. Isn't that nice? Maybe I'll save up and get one. No, look at that car. And without any ability to defer gratification, I'm going to take that car.
You don't deserve that car.
In fact, I'm going to punish you for tempting me. For doing this. So there is something that's insidious about envy.
Yeah, so okay, so let's, I guess the question is, were the seven deadly sins written at the same time as our topic tonight, the seven heavenly virtues?
No, the seven deadly sins were put together a couple times, but finally Gregory the First and his pontificate was 590 to 604, and I was not there at the coronation, so don't even... I know
you
the
were
photo.
Sick? Were you sick?
I know the photo looks like it, but that wasn't really me.
You're on vacation.
I think it was a cugino. It was a cousin that goes back a little while, and he wrote these. And then there was a series of others that came out of the Coptic Rite before that, and then in about 410, Aurelius. Ready? I love this name. Prudentius. And it means the prudential
one. The old Prudentius building.
The old Prudentius building. Thanks very much. It's a really nice place. We could take a taxi over there and do that. That's what I love about Chicago ease. You know, you could slur anything.
You can't.
But Prudentius actually means the prudent one in some sense. He proposed seven virtues, which were in some sense an amalgam of the classic philosophical virtues. Now, Socrates and Aristotle came up with, in the Republic, the first book on leadership and perhaps the first whole treatise on what it means to be a just or good person, talked about four different kinds of virtues: wisdom, justice, temperance, and courage. And then Prudentius added to that the three major virtues of the New Testament: charity, hope, and faith.
Okay.
And put together seven virtues and talked about them and how that they are a response to the seven deadly sins one to one.
All right, Professor Al Genie in studio. We've set up the seven deadly sins. We set up the seven heavenly virtues. When we come back, Let's start getting into them. We've got, these are good, okay? Chastity, temperance, charity, diligence, patience, kindness, and humility. Boring. Professor Al Genie, the resident philosopher in the download. Stay with us. It's download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me tonight. Our regular philosopher, our resident philosopher.
I'm not regular, but I am resident. That's great. Thank you.
Al Genie is the... He's a professor of business ethics in the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. And also, algenie.net. I don't do enough to give away your .net.
Well, thank you very much. I never thought I would wind up having a website, and I have to Twitter, too, because of my publishers. But, you know, this is a new marketing age. Hey. I just thought you stood on the corner and said, buy the book,
buy the book. It works for Donald Trump. It could be your new day. Twitter could be your new day.
Perhaps now I'm going to stop immediately. We'll see what happens.
All right, so we're talking tonight about the seven heavenly virtues. Mm-hmm. We talked about the seven deadly sins not too long ago on the show, but we're bringing up the counterpoint.
Right, but let me reinforce something. By these seven heavenly virtues right now, counterpoint the seven deadly sins. Remember, these are human virtues. We associate them
heavenly kind of throws it off.
Yeah, heavenly throws it off, and certainly they are Christian, and certainly they are Catholic in their orientation. But these are virtues for human beings, and they've persisted over the years because they make sense. Now, start off with charity.
All right, charity, number one.
Being generous towards others, kindness, the opposite of selfishness. In a very real sense, in Christian theology, though, caritas is the great love of God, is the pure love of another for only themselves and always giving to another. God's love, motherly love, parental love, right. That kind of thing. And when you think of charity here, what we're talking about is the opposite of greed, the opposite of excess, or opposite of materialism, the opposite of selfishness. And I think one of the problems of being an adult, there was a wonderful article in the New York Times this week about those minimal little homes that you bring out to, you know, someplace that are really two-room.
Those little tiny homes.
And I'm thinking about, what a wonderful thing. I've got a little piece of property. Maybe I'll just do that, and so it's not all this. And his comment was, life is about experience, not simply about collecting things. And at this point in my life, I collect so many things. You realize you've got to let go. One of the greatest things in life is to be able to let go. Take that.
But it's not just about letting go. It's also, in a way, about giving back.
Giving back and sharing. One of the most wonderful things for me at this point in my life, I'm able actually to tithe and to write that check every month. It is one of the most wonderful things to reach in my pocket and pick up a check. Now, my friends say I don't do it enough, but I have arthritis. My hand clutches up when the bill comes. I can't quite get into it.
But there's something to be said about, you know, because the word charity becomes charitable and then it becomes a donation. It's not necessarily about giving money.
No.
It's not saying you should give to charity. It's about the idea of giving back or giving of yourself.
Right. And I think it's giving yourself, being open to others. Charity is really being open to others. A wonderful example, one of my handball buddies mentioned I was leaving, you know, on a trip next week, so on and so forth. Before I got finished with the sentence, what day are you leaving? I could drive you. No, wait a minute. I'll just arrange it. Don't worry about it. I'm semi-retired. I could do this.
Right.
But this ability to stand outside of self and be concerned with others, this is not only a virtue that helps others, it's a virtue that helps ourselves. It's a virtue that gives us something back, too.
Because we're
not totally concerned. And any parent who's really been involved with a child knows that. I just finished Scott Turow's new book, which I will get back to you with a grade later. But he's talking about he has adult children in this novel, the character says. And he's wondering about, should he marry this younger woman? And he says, I would never want to cheat anyone of that wonderful experience of being a parent, that I loved my children so much I forgot any need that I might have, except the need to take care of myself so I could take care of my children. Yeah. A wonderful thing to think about.
I think a lot of people listening right now would feel that charity is very important.
Yes.
To them. That does, it not only is a great virtue, but it is probably the biggest when it comes to
living
defining, but also defining yourself.
Right.
I mean, you give back. You
right.
feel like
you're... That's
you,
right. Yeah. And I think this is not esoteria. Very often we think of the virtues, or we'll say to somebody, a gluttony. Well, it's such a, you know, who's really guilty of gluttony? Well, a lot of us are when you really think about it. But this is hands-on. Can you be good to another?
All right. Let's and for the seven deadly sins, it's the opposite of greed, of course.
Right,
absolutely. Okay, so number two, chastity.
Right. And everyone stops. Oh, chastity. No, wait. No, we're not talking about celibacy here. This is an old-fashioned word, chastity.
Yeah, I have a hard time with the definition, like chastity.
Yes. And we're not talking about Chastity Bono right now either. We're talking about not being captive of one's desires. We're not talking about celibacy. We're talking about balance, wholeness, discipline. That is to have a little something called deferred gratification, which keeps coming up in all of these sins, by the way. To be able to be in control, the ability to overcome temptation, to show a little self-discipline. The opposite of lust, because lust is an obsession. We talked about addiction before. The sadness of addiction is you need that. You know, remember those, you're maybe too young. Remember those commercials that came on late night TV when people didn't switch between channels because you didn't have one of those remotes? They would say, on cocaine, would you lie for me? Yes. Would you steal from me? Yes. Would you would you
sort die
for me?
PSAs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, because the addiction was greater than anything else in your life. And the addiction, and everybody knows that someone really stretched out on heroin right now doesn't need to get high, doesn't get high on the heroin. He gets normal or it just goes away. And so you obliviate yourself.
So chastity is really about self-discipline. I mean, we kind of have it as the opposite of lust, but it's also the opposite of addiction.
Right. But I think but lust is an addiction. I mean, one of the, I think, overrated, you know, I'm a sexual addict. Well, bravo. It used to be a joke, but it's not a joke. And I think that a lot of people are addicted to lots and lots of things, including our, shall we go across the street for a cafe latte noco doco dope with a double shot? 1750, thank you very much.
That's chastity, the opposite of lust. Let's get one more in before we hit the break.
Absolutely.
Let's get to diligence, prudence.
Prudence, and again, bad word, right? Prudence, to be prudential. It's an archaic term. It's like, are you from Oxford? Is that where you learned the word prudence, prudential? Quite so. It means being steadfast. It means being disciplined. It means living a life with others and recognizing that. It means an old-fashioned Roman word, Latin word, integritas, to be balanced, to have all things together. And so I think diligence means that you are not, you know, you're being zealous in your actions. And it is the opposite of sloth. And we laugh about sloth, and is it a sloth or a sloth? And the sloth is the animal, and the sloth is this. But sloth is really laziness. Sloth is your soon-to-be 13-year-old teenager. You know, I remember going into my son's room on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock and putting a mirror under his nose to make sure he was breathing because he was, you know, so I'm now with my grandson at 12. What do you do? I'm tired.
But
I'm tired.
Diligence is also, I mean, you kind of used the phrase staying true to your core beliefs or like you said, integrity, the idea that you believe in something and it defines you
and
you
all
protect
These all reinforce each other, but diligence is the athletic commitment to do again and again and again and again. Anybody who's been a runner, and I thankfully don't have to run anymore, my knees are gone, it was really a blessing when that finally happened. But I remember running, hitting the wall, keep going. But there was something, there was a rush in that.
Yeah.
There was, you know,
you were a runner.
And you were a runner and you really want to do it, but you had to force yourself for that joy. You had to push yourself for that joy. And so I think diligence is a recognition that everything, you know, takes work. And it's not going to happen by sitting there waiting for it. You got to do something about it. It means you've got to have, you know, skin in the game.
All right. We've got through three of the seven virtues, charity, chastity, and diligence. We'll take a break. Coming up, humility, kindness. I feel like it's the all-star game of virtues. Coming up this inning, humility, kindness, and patience. All right, Dale Jeanney, our resident philosopher, business professor at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, Chicago, with us. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on Rob's news. We'll come back and we'll continue the seven virtues. Stay with us. This is one of those new tracks for Professor Al Jeanney.
What is this?
It's a hot new track called Patience by Guns N' Roses. It's fun to watch the professor go, whoa, what is this? That's only a hit from 1988, but that's okay.
From 80 to 94, music did not exist for me. It was called Children.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight, we're taking our shot at the seven virtues. We did the seven deadly sins a couple months back. We're countering with the seven virtues that make you a good person, make you whole. Professor Al Jeanney is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, Chicago, and also a resident philosopher here. Okay, so we've gotten through three of them so far.
Right.
Charity, chastity, and diligence. We're on to number four.
Humility.
Ooh, good one.
Humility. And you know what? I've decided humility is this notion of knowing self, what Freud said, the hardest thing we could do in life is know ourselves and our strengths and our weaknesses and being able to do something about it. It's, of course, the Socratic adage, you know, the unexamined life isn't worth not worth living. And if you live that life, that means you're not living that life with your own sense of self. But more than that, I think humility is what Maslow means by self-actualization, that you know who you are, not false pride, because it's the opposite of pride, which is vanity and arrogance. And, mm-hmm. you know, and it's almost the, in some sense, I think false pride is self-loathing. Because you have to lie about yourself all the time and embellish yourself. I think true humility is actually knowing who you are and being aware of both your strengths and weaknesses and not being ashamed of that. On Terry Gross's show the other day, the chief ballerina for Ballantine was retiring, and she's after 30 years. And she said, I entered the retirement first with fear and loathe and drug, and then I processed my way through it, and I left, and I'm glad I left, and I left with a sense of esprit, with a sense of having lived a good career, and not regretting it because I've done it all. Dan Hampton said the same thing when he retired. I left everything on the field. I don't feel bad at all. It's over. My body can't handle it anymore. Right. And I had a great career. I think humility is self-awareness. And by the way, I also think there's something to it, and you could tie this to the temperance as well. Emotional intelligence. The more I think about it, I wrote a book on the 10 virtues of excellent leaders. But now I wish I had put emotional intelligence as the core uber virtue, that not only in control of yourself, but empathic to others. And so I think humility is control of self, being modest about self, but also being empathic towards others, understanding
and,
other people.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because in that, I would think that when you talk about humility, you would talk about the opposite, which would be pride or even ambition in the way that, or this idea of almost like this uber ambition, like I'm gonna win at all points. You almost find that in humility, this idea, the opposite of humility is people that will almost inflate their self ego because they're hiding something or whatever, but that's how they make themselves feel better or how they have to push through.
And I think real humility is analogous to sports. It doesn't always happen in professional sports. When a teammate does well, you do well. And you're happy for the goodness of your teammate. That's the way you should feel about it. Mm-hmm. It hits home run, you run out there and you embrace them. But I think humility is understanding what you can do and how you fit and understanding and responding to the needs of others
as
well.
It's such an interesting, because you know, I have a 9-year-old son, and he was just in a school play and talked about on the show. And there was lessons in humility because so many of his parents, his grandparents, his teachers, you did such a good job. You're doing so great. And, you know, then one point or another, we're in the car and he's like, well, I did such a great job, you know, and I said, yes, you did. But there's this thing called humility. And it's about understanding that, you know, you don't necessarily think of yourself the way that other people give you compliments.
Right. And it's a tough one. My mother always said that if you brag about yourself, you don't have nothing to brag about. And then Joe Namath said, it ain't bragging if it's the truth. You know, you actually do.
Right.
So
there's a real
but I think humility doesn't have the need to always exert self to be the center of attention. Hi, I've just spent an hour talking about me. Now let me stop and why don't you talk about me for a while again? I think humility says, I'm part of this. I'm not all of this, but I'm happy for what I am.
All right, let's move on to number 5, kindness.
Yes. And that seems so obvious, doesn't it?
Right.
Being kind, being good towards life. I think really kindness is openness to the well-being of others. Again, emotional intelligence comes in. Openness to the well-being of others. Recognizing that you're not the center of the room. Recognizing that people need something. It's called empathy. It's called being empathic.
It seems like you find empathy sort of shows up in
everywhere.
A lot of these.
I mean, it's stepping away from self, stepping away from self, stepping away from self, stepping away from self. There's the other joke about the two mezzo sopranos meeting on the street. How are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. You know, they're both singing about this. I think that it's a lack of envy. When two academics meet, and I say this with embarrassment but truth. When two academics meet, my best friend, Ron Green, whom I love, I mean, I love this man. I would die for this man. Not soon, and not unnecessarily, but I love this man. I say, Ron, how are you? He says, I just had a paper published here. I'm giving a talk there. My new book is coming out then. Now, I'm guilty of it too, and you've known me for a long time. That's how we demonstrate our worth, by demonstrating our curriculum.
What we've done.
But I think the real kindness is being empathic to the saying, I know what I've done. What have you done? I know how I feel when I do something well. What have you done? So I think it's the opposite of envy, and I'm not jealous of your accomplishments.
So kindness is really about wishing the best for everyone.
Yes, and not being jealous of them.
Because a lot of times I think kindness being, and I guess this gets confused, because kindness I would think is helping someone out, or you know, helping an old lady cross the street, or you know, giving to someone who might be less fortunate, like on the street, like homeless or something. But kindness really in this form as a virtue is about wishing the best for others.
I think that's absolutely the case. And I think it is the opposite of jealousy and the opposite of covetousness, and that you are willing to give up and give away and not be envious of others. I remember a friend telling me that in a second marriage, that the father, who was, the wife was dead, his mother was dead, was not happy with the marriage at all. I said, why? He said, well, why should you be happy when I'm not?
Yeah, right?
Envy. Envy. And it's a worm that
eats us. Kindness is the opposite of envy.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going. We're going down to the final two here. Let's go to this one. This one's important. This one, patience.
Yeah. It is the opposite of anger. It's the opposite of fury. It's the opposite of demanding. It's called forbearance. It's something I just learned last year. And because my brother asked, my body forced me to learn the lesson.
Right.
That you can't force life. You have to be patient with life, that you can't make demands of life all the time. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't put your best foot forward. That doesn't mean you shouldn't seek. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try. But I think patience is being peaceful about it's about accepting life. And I think, and I've learned this from people, not just in my own life. I mean, I've learned this from the pain of others. People who have terminal illness or debilitating illnesses. He said, well, you know, I mean, this one chap said to me, it was wonderful. He said, well, I had 68 years of absolute, never been sick a day in my life, and now my body's failing me. Well, I got 68 more than I thought. And he really meant that with a true acceptance of what was going on. Now, I don't think this is just, oh, you know, this is a way to just put a mustard patch on a wound. I think real patience is recognizing that you can't always force things, mm-hmm. that you can't always seek things, that you have to let things happen. And I think, again, the parent model, you can't force that child to be. My father was so disappointed in me because I wasn't the athlete he needed me to be.
As you say that, I wonder where does the idea fall under patience, the idea of letting things go?
Yeah, and I think you have to be careful, because letting things go also could mean you're loathsome and you're guilty of sloth. But I think letting things go is recognizing I've done everything I possibly can here. Now I have to let it go. Now I have to let, you know, again, Scott Turow's book. He wants to marry this woman. He says, now you have to make this decision.
Right.
Do you want to have children? He says to this young woman. He says, well, can we talk about this? He says, no, this is not about me. This is about you, and you have to make that decision, and then we'll decide if it's possible.
So if patience is one of those virtues where you want to let it go, but you let it go in a way that it just is really just deferring a decision or something you have to do, then you're really going into sloth territory.
They're going sloth territory. I think real patience is my son or my daughter I love her partner. I love Dan. But if she comes home with somebody who's absolutely anathema, ass, I don't like him at all, I can only kindly say it once to them. Are you sure about this? Because all of a sudden you've got a 35-year-old saying, yeah, pretty sure, Dad. I'm an adult. I can handle this. So patience. And I think patience, the simplest phrase, letting go. Be natural. Let it go. Always involved. But after a while, you let go. I sent my children to college. I couldn't make them PhDs. I couldn't make them an author. I sent them to college. I gave them the opportunity. That's the patience that we're talking about.
Al Jeanie is my guest tonight. We're talking about the seven virtues, sort of a contrast to the seven deadly sins that we talked about a couple months back. And we wrap up the seven virtues with our final virtue, the seventh on the list, temperance.
Yes, and this is some sense redundant, because we're talking about restraint. We're talking about mindfulness. We're talking about overcoming, our deferring gratification. I think what we're talking about here, again, is emotional intelligence, being placed, being comfortable. There's something very, when you analyze all these, there's something very Buddhist about this. The seven steps of Buddhism. There's something very important about the central part for Buddhism is you can't force life. You don't have to like it, but you have to accept it. And I think temperance is also that. Being in control of self, doing the best one can, but knowing you can't ever do it.
What I like about this one, and just from the notes as well, is that you say realizing the legitimacy in several points of view. And we see that play out now where, whether it be political or even social, we get a point of view, we stick on it, nothing else matters. No one else's point of view matters.
Right. I think
it has to happen.
I think we bastardized the notion of rugged individualism, that everyone has the right to their own opinion and everyone is absolutely right. That can't be true. But we also have to allow the others. You know, the polls are out this week. We're becoming more and more divided about the opposite. I think we have to recognize there's a certain legitimacy. I did not vote for the president, but I understand why people did. No, let's forget everything that's going on right now, whatever I would like. I understand why people, they wanted change. They wanted something different. They were tired, you know, they're tired of the same old gang. Here's a woman who's been in politics, Bush, and there was a possibility that the presidential election was between a Clinton and a Bush. In other words, two families. Are we an oligarchy or are we a democracy? I understand why people said, damn them
all.
Enough of that. Let's try something different.
And that plays to a virtue, temperance, to understand. Again, we're back to empathy. We're back to this idea.
Doesn't mean you have to understand.
You don't have to agree, but you have to understand.
I understand. Right. Even talking about drugs before, I understand. I have a couple of friends who are alcoholics. I understand why they're alcoholics. Because alcohol for them is a way of not dealing with a certain ugliness in life. That film that everyone praised,
Manchester by the Sea.
Of course he's miserable. He killed his children.
Hey, spoiler alert.
I'm sorry. No one should go see that film. It's too painful. And they won the awards and he deserved it.
When is the expiration date on a spoiler alert? I'm never going to see it, so it's okay.
But
you're right.
But,
yeah.
Right. I mean, there's no miserable way. He's never going to say, well, I'm going to self-actualize myself. I'm going to go to meetings and I'm going to become an outgoing person and love again. Are you kidding that he's breathing is a marvelous enterprise?
And I mean, and not only understanding or realizing the legitimacy of different points of view, but it's also in your own way maintaining neutrality in this way that you're not necessarily always just off on one side and it's my way or the highway.
Right.
There has to be some sort of neutral court in which you live your life.
Right. And I think that if you want to claim the right to free speech and free thought, you have to allow that right with others. And I think temperance gives us, again, this Buddhist notion of you have to let go. You have to allow others to be other. And I think I've allowed you to be an other tonight, and I think you've done very well.
We got all seven.
I do think you do specialize in sloth, but your wife sent me a couple notes in this regard. Laziness and idleness seems to be your cup of tea.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think these are real issues. These are just not philosophical ideas. A lot of people think philosophy is, you know, either how many angels could dance on the head of a pin or brain surgery. First of all, three angels can dance on every pin.
You guys have come together on that.
Thank you. We're decided about that. And brain surgery is much more complicated than we ever thought. But I don't think philosophy is this abstract. I think philosophy is about ideas that motivate us in life and ideas that give us a better handle in life. And the seven deadly things are something to avoid. And I think the seven charities are something to approach.
There you go. Professor Al Jeany, professor of business ethics in the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, also a resident philosopher here. We will talk with you next month, bud.
Absolutely. See you soon.